They left the POW camp with one of Zhao's platoons in front of and one behind the liberated prisoners. The third platoon walked to either side of the files. Some of Zhao's men had already managed to lose their red tape sashes. Beyond the column, in the darkness that matched Valentine's mood, Nail and his bears reconnoitered. Valentine walked beside Zhao. The lieutenant had made a hash of things, and Valentine's anger could easily have given way to what Zulu Company's Sergeant Patel used to call a two-boot stomp dressing down. It might let Valentine blow off steam, but whether it would do the rattled Zhao any good depended on the resilience of the man. Dawn was still hours away, but already the Quislings were reorganizing. Here and there in the dark, isolated snipers were taking pot shots at the column. So far, all the shots were misses, but they were unsettling, especially to the unarmed prisoners.
Sir, the company hasn't had enough time together. It's not like all these men had combat experience. Some were militia called up during the invasion. I've only got a handful in each platoon trained as infantry.
Lieutenant, I know you feel like you've been asked for miracles. That you even got everyone to the camp in the dark along a route you weren't that familiar with is a credit to you. You got all this going at a moment's notice. Don't worry about the rest.
That Captain Beck.
Beck's not in charge.
It's going to happen at Omega, sir.
A lot of work.
More fighting.
I expect. They'll be coming for us, though. Gonna play defense for a while.
That's good, sir. I've had some experience with that.
What was it like when you hit the camp? The first time, that is.
I was scared. I saw their rifle barrels everywhere. I was scared more troops were going to come rolling down the road behind me while I was looking at the camp. When we started toward the wire and the machine gun opened up, I just lost it, sir.
Somewhere behind him, Valentine saw the Abaca brothers embracing. The younger playfully cuffed his older brother across the back of the head. The green flare was the right decision.
You acted according to your judgment. You were there and I wasn't. A machine gun can kill a lot of men in a few seconds. But remember what was in your head next time you see the enemy coming at you. I know it sounds like they're howling for your blood and nothing can stop them. Remember how you felt. Sometimes the noise is just fear let loose. Now that you know their fear, you can work it.
How do you stop from being scared in the first place, sir?
Zhao, I asked my old captain the wolves that exact question. I'll tell you what he told me. Don't. It'll keep you sharp.
When they reached their destination, Valentine pointed into the darkness around the warehouses.
Send a runner ahead to that post, Zhao. Make sure there are men.
While Zhao organized that, Beck and Kessie rested their prisoners. After his messenger moved off, Zhao rejoined them.
Once we're across the river, we'll be back in our own lines.
Captain, you're addressing a fellow captain, you know.
Never mind that, Lieutenant. Captain Beck and I go back far enough that the niceties don't matter. In answer to your question, Captain, the only lines in the neighborhood are the ones we're about to draw. This is a deep penetration raid, you might say. My orders are to tie down as many troops as possible.
Where do we fit in? Don't worry about my rank, Mr. Valentine. As far as I'm concerned, I'm under your orders. This is your op. I'll do as you say.
Couldn't stand to see friends behind barbed wire, Colonel.
Seems to me I once criticized you for rounding up strays, Vat. Captain, looks a little different to me now. Thanks for getting me out of the frying pan.
We in the fire are glad to have you. What sort of mix you have?
There's a few wolves, incognito. They put on militia uniforms in case of capture. The rest are mostly guards. I have infantry, heavy weapons, signals, some engineers and mechanics. Backwash from the big bug out that didn't make it to the mountains.
And you, sir?
The usual mix. I've got a first-class gunsmith. You might find work for her. A couple of doctors and a nurse.
A runner interrupted their talk.
We were hoping to link up with the prison party, sir. Captain Stajkowski didn't know you'd be with them. She sent out a scouting party to observe the Kurian Tower, but they came back and said nothing had happened there. I'm to take you to her. She's down by the docks. She's made space for the prisoners on a barge.
Good. Captain Beck, Lieutenant Colonel Kessie, if you could get them up again, please. What's that?
I think it's mortars from the heights. They're dropping shells around the docks. It's blind fire, sir. They're not hitting anything but rubble.
When the sun gets up, that'll change. Zhao, get them moving. Best pace the prisoners can manage.
Stajkowski was in the wheelhouse of the barge, using the radio there. The barge was to be used to get the men across in case of catastrophe at the railroad bridge. She held the microphone in one hand, a cane in the other, her face lit by instrument telltales. She visibly sagged in relief when Valentine appeared in the doorway.
The train's almost empty now. Still no action here. You want me to send it back? Over?
Yeah, send it back. Over and out. Thought something had happened to you, sir.
Some confusion at the prison yard.
A soldier ran up the side stairs and entered the cabin.
Should the people from the work camp be put on board?
You're in charge of the warehouses and docks.
Yes. What's the situation, Stiekowski?
Oh. Supply train to go north was just waiting there. I figured we could use what was on it as well as the opposition. Here's the juicy part. There were 455mm guns loaded on flat cars and ready to go, along with a bunch of other goodies. Post had his men ride the rooftops. It was quite a sight.
Have you heard from Anka?
It took the bridge, no problem. Just a couple of corporal's guards at either end. After securing it, he went overland to Omega. Called us on Solon's own transmitter. There was a little shooting. Someone was wounded up there, but he took the residents intact.
So where are the Quislings?
Sitting tight, waiting to be told what to do. I don't think it's sunk into anyone what's happening yet, except maybe your Kurian in his tower. The prisoners we took here said they sent everyone with a gun there to guard him.
How many prisoners?
Few dozen. Night watchman-type MPs making sure nobody pilfers, at least without giving them a cut. They're sitting under guard in the canteen here. We hauled X-ray Tango back. He was conscious for a few minutes and cursing you up and down. Seeing his headquarters on fire could have had something to do with that. I've collapsed into a little pocket here. I wasn't sure if I should burn the headquarters. I didn't want to give the mortar guys another reference mark.
Nice work, Stiekowski. We're lucky to have you with us. Really lucky.
It's been a nail-biter every second.
What's this about sending the train back? That wasn't part of the plan.
It was loaded. We couldn't fit everyone without dragging boxcars around. There's still plenty of stuff in the warehouse we can use.
You have the manpower to load it before dawn?
We can try.
Use the men we took out of the camp. Medical supplies, food, ammunition, especially for those guns. In that priority. Forget the rest. After the train pulls out, send every pickup you have after it. They can bump their way over the bridge easily enough. We'll need transport to get it all from the station up the hill to the residence. At first light, set everything else on fire.
Can do, sir. Excuse me. I better start giving orders.
Valentine faced the 30-odd men under guard in a corner of one of the warehouses. The warehouses were shells of better-built structures that had survived the blast. Their drafty, burned-out interiors smelled of rat feces and cat urine, but they were space out of the rain. New walls of corrugated aluminum were wired onto the reinforced concrete. Stiekowski's soldiers and the liberated POWs were filling handcarts and shuttling goods out the door in a frenzy.
I'll give you my standard speech. Anyone who joins us gets a new life in the free territory. Come with us as civilians. You'll work harder than you did under the hoods, but you'll be able to do it with a clear conscience. This isn't an or else. We're gonna leave you somewhere safe. You might want to think about what'll happen when they start investigating all this. Angry hoods aren't particular about allocating blame where it belongs. Heads are gonna roll for this one. You might think about the chances of it being yours. This is Corporal Lopez. Any of you who want to take us up on the offer of a fresh start, just speak to him. Again, we're not threatening you with anything if you don't stand up. We'll leave that to the Kurians. Maybe you've got family back in the KZ, I don't know. Choice is yours, but make up your minds fast. We're in a hurry.
Valentine walked over to the sliding doors to the main aisle of the warehouse. One of the advantages of higher rank was the ability to stand around where and when you chose, just observing. He looked at the carts going out to the pickups and vans. Sacks of rice, cases of ham, tins of butter, dehydrated fruit, cotton balls, and motor oil. His real intent was to get a read on the faces, especially X-ray Tango, who had sat through his lecture in contemptuous silence. If anyone had his neck in a noose, it was he. X-ray Tango remained seated, holding a washcloth to the side of his head. Only three volunteers stood up to join Lopez. Valentine wondered if they knew something he didn't. Two men, both POWs of Bex, were wounded by long-range fire while the second train was being loaded. Valentine sent Nail and his bears out to find the snipers, but they returned to report they'd shot and run. There was only one company left, spaced out wide to cover the roads, rail platform, warehouses, and dock. They knew they had to pull back and get across the river when Valentine's flare went up, or dawn, whichever came first. Valentine was watching the road leading to the Kurian Tower, where the remaining flames of X-Ray Tango's headquarters gave him a good view of the road. The road wasn't concerning Valentine. What was approaching on it had him worried.
Armored cars, snowplows, I think. Two of them. Pickups behind, double axles with light armor tacked on.
Snowplows was Southern Command's shorthand for long, heavy armored cars with pointed prows for pushing through roadblocks. Armored cupolas with machine guns, or sometimes a 20-millimeter gun nicknamed a bushwhacker, stood high and gave the gunner a tower-like view. They were built on the skeletons of garbage truck-sized vehicles.
They're in for a shock, as long as our heavy weapons guys know what they're doing.
2 minutes, I'll be right back.
Valentine gave his men, squatting next to their stovepipe-like recoilless rifles, a thumbs up and ran back to the train platform.
Stankowski! Roll! Roll! Have everything roll!
She nodded and signaled to the man working the engine, a Quisling officer's machine gun bumping at her hip. A soldier helped her into the back boxcar.
The rest of you, fall back to the barge! The barge! Follow the women!
Stankowski had used the female POWs after all. They stood along the road holding emergency candles. The lights weren't bright enough to be seen by the distant snipers, let alone the mortars on Pulaski Heights, especially with the warehouses beginning to burn. The men began to pull out, some carrying a last load between them, guided to safety by the candle-holding women. Valentine pulled the flare gun from his shoulder bag and broke it open. He fired it. Before its parachute opened, he was already running back to the bears. He glanced up, and the white glare traced an angry scrawl on his retinas.
Here they come!
Valentine could see the turreted tops of the armored cars above the rubble, coming toward them like the dorsal fin of an attacking shark. The bears had arranged rubble to cover their heads and shoulders. Valentine joined one of the teams with the light artillery. A box of forearm-sized shells was laid out, ready for loading, and a soldier knelt next to the tube, looking down a crosshairs bracket as he adjusted the barrel with levers.
Let them have it as soon as you can.
Yes, Colonel. Cap.
Don't worry about it. Just put a shell in.
The first armored car rounded the corner, the pointed prow on it filling the street.
Clear!
The other two in the crew were already well away from the back of the weapon. The back blast kicked up a shroud of dust, blinding Valentine for a moment. The loaders opened the crossbars at the back and slid in a brassy new shell. Valentine heard the bear shooting. The front snowplow had been stopped, and smoke poured from the front. It was firing back. Tracers arced from the turret, their brightness leaving strange echoes on his retinas. He saw vague shapes of troops exiting the armored car behind it before the recoilless rifle fired again.
That's it. Wreck the tube.
One more shell, sir!
Shoot and fall back.
Nail! Get out of it!
More tracer streaks lit up the street. The gunner fired again, blindly. Valentine waited to see Nail and his bears run for the burning warehouses and pulled the gunner out by his collar. The loaders put another shell in the tube and placed the spares beneath its massive tripod. Tracer fire began to seek the recoilless weapon like a probing finger.
Better get going, sir!
The gunner threw a bag over his shoulder. He pulled out a shining new grenade. Valentine looked up the street and made his dash. He gestured to the gunners, trying to encourage them to hurry. The gunner nodded to the other two and tossed the grenade in with the shells under the tube. The three of them ran. From the platform, Valentine looked at the rail bridge. He saw the tailgate of a pickup bumping as the tires negotiated the ties. Men walked single file on the pedestrian walkway, crossing over to the north side. Others were setting charges. The bears came up behind him with the recoilless gunners.
Nail, it'll have to be the boat. We're getting set to blow the bridge.
Nail nodded, and they turned for the riverbank. A few members of the rear guard were hurrying for the dock. Mortar shells were dropping around the train station. Nail clapped Valentine on the back.
Ha ha! We really?
Valentine felt a warm hand give him a gentle nudge. He realized he was on the ground. Nail lay facing him, his leg on top of Valentine's, like two lovers in bed.
You okay?
Oh, sure.
Nail started to pick himself up. Neither of his legs moved. Valentine tried to help him up.
Rain! Anyone! Help!
Legs!
Nail looked up at Valentine. He'd never seen fear in the bear's eyes before. Valentine picked him up in a fireman's carry and trotted down toward the pier. The barge waited, huge and comforting. The sergeant handling the load called out,
"Cast off! Cast off!"
Zhao was running between little groups, clapping them on the shoulder and pointing toward the barge. Valentine saw his old Marines from the Thunderbolt leave the piled sandbags around the dock. Sandbags were easily found around the riverbank, and run up the gangplank to the barge. There was a hint of light in the sky. By it, Valentine saw the main deck of the barge piled high with sandbags. The cargo carrier in front was filled with people, mostly prisoners from the camp and Zhao's company. The sergeant spotted Nail and Valentine approaching up the gangplank.
"Bandages! Take him to the foredeck, sir. The wounded are there."
Valentine boarded and went forward. Just below the pilot house, a man in splints and one of the women lay under blankets next to Beck's two wounded. Field medics helped Valentine lay Nail out.
"Sorry about this, Nail."
"Don't feel a thing, sir. Hardly hurts."
"Shrapnel. His back's kind of tore up. I've stopped the bleeding. Most of it."
The barge moved away from the dock, heading upriver.
"Can I get you anything, Nail?"
I want to see."
"You want to see?"
"The bridge go."
Valentine looked at the medic, who shrugged.
"Let me get this dressing finished, and then we'll see."
Valentine couldn't remember giving orders about having an aid station set up on the boat, one of Stiakowski or Post's additions. They passed under the old pilings of the railroad span. Valentine heard the distinctive clatter of a Kalashnikov fired from the river rat's towel. When the medic finished with Nail's dressing, Valentine pulled a soldier, and they carried his stretcher to the back of the tug. The screws were churning the muddy waters of the Arkansas. Behind them, they could see the bridge framed against a pink sky. The warehouses were going up. A ground-level fireworks explosion.
"We fucked with them good. That sight's worth getting all tore up over."
"Come on, guys. Don't wait and try to take a few with the bridge. Just..."
Explosions ripped across the bridge, and wood and rails spun into the sky.
"What the hell?"
The bridge still stood.
"Ah, shit! They didn't use enough C-Big!"
"They used plenty. They just used it all at the bottom of the bridge, where it meets the pilings. They tore up the track good, that's all. On a truss bridge, the load is all borne by the joints at the top. If they'd just blown out the tops of the span we passed under, they'd be in the river."
A mortar shell landed in the water astern of them.
"Oh, this boat trip's gonna get cut short."
The barge edged toward Big Rock Mountain. Valentine felt it shudder. The soldiers went to the rail, concerned.
"We're aground!"
"Shit!"
"Okay, just wade, swim, whatever!"
Valentine ran forward, leaving Nail for the moment.
"Out of here! Over the side! Just go! Manfred, help the women! We need stretcher bearers! Who wants to carry?"
Part evacuation, part shipwreck, they got the soldiers and some of the supplies overboard. Valentine stayed with the wounded until the stretchers were ashore. The water helped deaden the effect of the mortars. They did little more than create brief fountains of water as they exploded.
"There's still a lot of cargo on the barge. Forget it. We need to get up the hill."
It was easier said than done. The hillside rose 200 feet at a steep grade, where it wasn't a cliff. There was an old switchback road going up the side. Valentine sent up the stretcher bearers in groups so they could replace each other. He stood among the trees at the base of the hill, watching the mortars drop shells into the barge. The Quislings seemed to be taking strange pleasure in wasting shells on the wreck, rather than dropping them on the hillside where they might do some damage. Valentine looked across the river. He could just see the tip of the crane building the Kurian Tower, though he supposed the construction schedule had been set back. He looked up to see a mountain of muscle.
"Good morning, Anka."
"I am glad to see you, my David. It's been a long night."
"For both of us. Post and Stiakowski arrive."
"Stiakowski is at the residence now. Post is still unloading the second run."
"What's the TMCC doing about it?"
"At first light, I heard some shooting far to the north. My guess is two patrols ran into each other."
"So you don't think they figured out where we are?"
"They'll know soon, my David."
"What do you think they'll do?"
"I leave outthinking them to you. I just try to outfight them."
"If you had to outfight me right now?"
"I'd try you soon. Before you could organize. Today. Tonight."
"Wouldn't hurt to pretend you're giving the orders across the river. Let's get up the hill."
It was full light by the time Valentine approached Solon's residence across the bulldozed hilltop. A bulldozer was at work, digging pits into the ground in front of the house beyond the turnaround. Post stood in front of the entrance, giving orders. A truck pulled up, and a team of men hurried to take the crates out and manhandle them inside. With the bed emptied, the pickup turned around and drove back down the road to the station. Post looked up as Valentine approached.
The hill is secure, sir. Ella, Daltrey, and Pollock have their companies north, east, and southeast. We've got observers watching the river. Stiakowski is holding the station until we get the rest up here, unless they come in force. This is a choice piece of ground. I can see why Solon picked it. Great view.
Where are the wounded?
Post pointed to one of the building shells.
Lower level of that one, sir. The doctors are getting set up in there. There was already a little dispensary for the construction workers, and they're expanding it. They could use some trained nurses. Dr. Brow's already bitching.
I know of one. Get Narcisse in there as soon as you can.
She's with the wounded at the station. Nothing serious, but you know her. If someone's in pain...
I'm glad you had the sense not to stop her. Let's get the prisoners organized. Colonel Kessie. She's got an eye patch, easy to spot. Said she had some doctors.
I saw her come over the hill. She's talking to the men placing the guns now.
Every company has quickwood spears, right?
Having them is one thing. Getting them to use them is another.
We've got today, at least. They won't hit us with Reapers until dark. Carry on, Will. Lieutenant Nail's been badly wounded by shrapnel, hit in the back.
Damn. You know, I don't think anyone's been killed yet. On our side, anyway. Who ever heard of that?
Maybe our luck's finally turned.
To the extent that there were still MDs, Major Brow deserved her title. She was a field surgeon with 10 years' experience in the Guards and had seen everything metal could do to the human body.
What are Nail's chances, Doc?
I'm not hopeful, sir. Tore open his back. One kidney's gone, the other's probably damaged enough so it might as well be gone, too. His back's broken and there's massive nerve damage. I'm surprised he was even coherent when they brought him in.
He's a bear. They're tough.
I'm a surgeon. Lifeweaver mysticism isn't my field.
So he's still conscious?
I gave him a shot. I expected him to drop right off, but the morphine just relaxed him. He's in some kind of wide-awake shock. Low blood pressure, fast heart rate, eyes a little dilated. Lots of perspiration.
Mind if I have a word?
Go ahead. Sir, I have a request.
Shoot, Doc. Anything for Nail?
No, it's not that. I understand there's some kind of housing up here. If they've got a cookhouse, could you look for a refrigerator or a freezer? Without somewhere to store blood and plasma, wounded turn to corpses a lot easier. Your men have been stockpiling food and bullets. If it's going to be a fight, I'm going to need to do the same with blood. Some kind of donation schedule would help.
Any coolers we find go to you.
Thank you.
If you need anything else, ask myself, Post, or Stiakowski. You'll get priority, but I hope you're very bored down here.
Save the cheerful hero stuff for the troops. Years of amputations have made me a cynic.
Valentine walked over to Nail, who was resting on a folding cot. Nail's gear had been placed beneath the cot. Valentine picked up a tube he couldn't identify. It looked a little like a metallic zither. A waste bucket with a blood-soaked dressing lay next to it, and the coppery odor brought back memories of the headquarters cellar. Valentine didn't want to think about that for a while.
They have you comfortable, Nail?
Yes, sir. Damn sorry I'm out of commission for a while.
Valentine lifted the canteen lying beside the bed.
Water?
Yes. Thank you, sir. I could use a meal. I've been running around since the meeting.
I'll see about it.
Valentine wobbled the tube in his hand like a baton.
You like that, sir? You can have it. Brass came up with the idea.
What's it do?
Here, gimme.
Nail took it from him, aimed at the ceiling, and pushed a button. A dart flew out and buried itself there. Dr. Brow gave him a dirty look.
There's a real serious spring inside. The winder's on the top, and you turn it clockwise to ready it. There's a safety at the front you need to flick off. To fire it, you just push the button. I got some quickwood darts for it in my bag. I won't be needing it for a while. God, I hate being fucked up and useless.
Lieutenant, I need your help. We might have some Reapers in our laps tonight. You think it would be better to space your bears out with the companies to steady them? Or should I keep them back here and commit them when I know where the attack's coming from?
They're used to working as a team, sir. Keep them back. Chances are,
The Reapers will just try to claw through your guys to get to the rear, where they can do more serious damage. My team will clobber them.
Thanks, Neil.
Just give me a few days, sir. A week. Then I'll be back. Rain can run the team until then. If I don't, you give him my bars. He's earned them.
Neil, now that you've got some downtime, you want to write some letters? You have a family, a girl?
I'm a bear, sir. My only family's rooting through that supply dump out front looking for chow. If they find something to eat, have them remember me in here, laid out and hungry.
I'll see that you aren't forgotten. It's a promise.
Valentine exchanged a questioning look with Brow and wondered how "it's a promise" would look on Nail's tombstone. Big Rock Mountain, March of the 48th year of the Kurian Order. Viewed from above, the outline of Big Rock Mountain looks like a cameo of a Regency buck, or perhaps Elvis Presley during his last Vegas days. The Arkansas River flows west into the King's Forehead, complete with lock of hair hanging down, where it stopped by the cliff face of a quarry and turned south. After the small bulge of the nose, the river passes a protruding jaw. The hill curves off east, gradually leaving the river, into an oversized collar tucked into the hair flowing down to North Little Rock. What was Interstate 40 runs up the base of the north side of the hill. It's a picturesque prominence, named La Grande Roche by Bernard de la Harpe in 1722 as he traveled among the Quapaw Indians. The climb up the 580-foot hill is worth it, for the view west and east along the two gentle bends the Arkansas makes as it flows into Little Rock. Or so it must have seemed to the man who built a luxury hotel upon it for the swells of the Gilded Age. But hotels are a chancy business. The hilltop property became Fort Logan H. Roots when men trained for the Great War in the swampy ground of Burns Park north of the hill. Following a progression so logical that it verges on the sublime, the fort became a Veterans Administration hospital for those shattered in the staccato series of 20th century wars. It became a warren of buildings, from elegant Grecian structures complete with solemn columns to the smallest maintenance shack and pump house, surrounded by parks full of oaks and a hilltop lake, memorials and greenways. That was before the blast. The 20 megaton airburst, part of the nuclear fireworks that helped end the reign of man in the chaos of 2022, went off at 10,000 feet, somewhere in the air between the Broadway Street and Main Street bridges over the Arkansas. It left nothing but foundations 10 miles from the epicenter, barring reinforced concrete construction, and a limb-shorn oak that had seen it all, like one of the shattered veterans of the former VA hospital. The men were gathered beneath the grandfather oak. The tree, perhaps because it was partly sheltered by one of the great buildings, had survived the blast and the fires that came with it. It had the tortured look of a lightning-struck tree, scored on the southeast side and shorn of older branches from 2 o'clock to 4 and from 7 to 10, though knobby amputations showed where the once leafy limbs had been. Valentine looked at the expectant faces in the afternoon sun. They were haggard, unshaven, tired. Post and Stiakowski had pushed them to the extreme of what could be expected of soldiers, and then beyond. The former POWs were mixed in with the men he'd brought away from Martinez, though they looked better, strangely enough, than when they first arrived. Almost anything is preferable to being inside barbed wire. Post had assembled a list of operational specialties from the prisoners. The hilltop redoubt was well supplied with ration processors, women and men who were experienced canners, food dehydrators, pickling, and drying specialists. There were no herds to slaughter or bushels of fruit and vegetables to puree and seal.
If they come up the hill, we'll just can the AOT troops like sardines.
Valentine had almost a whole motor pool from Pine Bluff, invaluable to Southern Command with their wrenches and hoists, but they would have to put rifles in their hands and cartridge cases around their waists. In this he was blessed, as Southern Command had a tradition of rotating men between frontline and support duties, allowing the Freehold to rapidly convert support units to combat operations. All of them had heard bullets fly and shells land in dreadful earnest. He wished he had more time to get to know them. Post and Beck would have to rely on volunteers to put together an NCO grid. The four big guns were spaced out like the bases on an oversized baseball diamond in the open ground in front of Solon's residence, each in its own pit, dug by the bulldozer and ringed with sandbags. The backhoe was still making trenches to the ammunition dump, buried deep beneath a layer of sandbags, dirt, railroad ties, and rail beams. This last came from the dismantled rail line the now destroyed train had run on to the station near the old interstate. Apart from the occasional shell from Pulaski Heights, the only military action to take place in the last 48 hours was a skirmish already going into the Free Territory folklore as the Great Howling Grog Chicken Raid. Anka had led two platoons into the outskirts of North Arkansas and snatched up every chicken, goose, goat, piglet, calf, sheep, and domestic rabbit they could run down and stuff in a sack, at the cost of the commanding officer getting a buttock full of birdshot from a 20-gauge, while a third platoon blasted away at the men guarding the partially blown bridge from 1,000 yards. Anka had been running from a henhouse with a pair of chickens in each hand when the bird keeper peppered him with shot that had to be dug out by a medic named Heideka with sterilized tweezers. In tall tale fashion, the circumstances of Anka's wounding and subsequent extraction of the pellets were exaggerated until, in one version already being told over the radio, Anka was sneaking past a window with a sow under each arm and six chickens in each hand when an 80-year-old woman stuck a gun out the window and gave him both barrels as he bent to tie his shoe. The shot, in that particular version, had to be dug out by a Chinese tailor working with knitting needles used as chopsticks. But the raid was the Big Rock Mountain Garrison's first offensive success of the campaign. As a bonus, a baker's dozen of forgotten milkers were rustled from their riverside pasture and driven up the two hairpins of the switchback road on the south side of the Big Rock Mountain.
Men! You've been following orders that haven't made much sense for 3 days straight. You've done your duty without questions or answers that made any sense. I'm going to try to straighten you out now. Please pass on what I say to everyone who is on watch at the skyline.
The skyline was the men's name for the edge of the hillside, where a series of foxholes and felled trees traced the military crest, the point where the slope could be covered by gunfire. They didn't have a quarter of the trained men they needed to man the extended line. By using three companies, he could place a soldier about every 15 yards along the line, if he didn't cover the cliffs above the quarry with more than sentries.
We were the first move in an effort to take back the Ozarks from Kerr! We're about as far behind the lines as we can be. There are divisions of Quislings between us and the forces north and south, which will soon be driving for us.
Valentine knew he'd be roundly damned for what he was telling them. By the men if they found out he was lying, by his conscience if it was successfully kept from them. It was a guess at best. For all he knew, Southern Command was going to move toward Fort Scott or Pine Bluff. Since the men holding the Boston Mountains were a charade of an army, there wasn't a snowflake's chance in hell of being relieved from the north. And as for the south...
We're in radio contact with Southern Command. They know about the blow we struck the night before last. We threw a wrench into the gears of the TMCC. You know it, I know it. And the Quislings will know it when they start going hungry and running out of bullets to shoot at your comrades.
All that was true enough. With only Post in the basement radio room, he'd made a report to Southern Command, and after an hour's pause, they'd contacted him, only to say that he'd been promoted to Major and was now part of Operations Group Center, under the titular command of General Martinez. They told him that he was to tie down as many troops as possible and be prepared to operate without the direct support of Southern Command for an indeterminate time frame. Valentine didn't think that clumsy phrase or the mention of Martinez would bring cheers.
From this hill, with the guns and mortars taken in our raid, we command a vital rail, road, and river crossing. Consul Solon had to give up his old headquarters at Fort Scott to the Currians of Oklahoma. He was in the process of transferring it here. Now we've taken his new one, right down to his personal foam cushion toilet seat, which I placed under new management this morning. We're in a strong position with plenty to eat and shoot. I hope you like the view. You're going to be enjoying it for a long time. But the work has just begun. I'm going to put every man in this command under the temporary command of Captain Beck, the officer commanding the prisoners we brought out of Little Rock. I served and chopped
and Doug under him. He's been in two corners as tight as this one, outside Hazlitt, and commanding me at Little Timber Hill. And I'm still breathing because he knows how to fortify. He's going to work you until you drop. Then he'll wake you up and work you some more. But you'll be alive at the end of this because of it.
Liar. Beck pulled Valentine aside as Lieutenant Colonel Kessie took over the assembly.
Major Valentine needed a trained artillery officer, and I, for my sins, happen to be one. I need more crews. The one I put together to set up the guns won't help me much to shoot the other three. Anyone who's got experience as a gun bunny, cannon cocker, or ammo humper, please raise your hand.
What are the latest regs on friendly fire casualties?
Be thankful they don't have to counter-battery the mortars on Pulaski Heights just yet.
Not enough. Anyone who knows what those words mean, raise your hands.
We won't hear from them for a while. They shot their ready reserve and we've got the rest. That, or they're saving it for a charge up our hill.
Anyone who thinks they might know. Finally. Good news. You're all in the artillery now.
What do you need, Captain?
Valentine, what happened after Little Timber? I'm sorry. This arm meant no more duty in the wolves.
It meant no more duty in the wolves for me too, Captain.
That's my fault.
Doesn't matter now. You're a hell of a fortification engineer. The best officer I ever served with was Lahav in Zulu Company. But if I had my choice of him or anyone else in Southern Command for this job, I'd want you.
Thank you, sir.
It won't be easy. We don't have anything like the men we should have to defend this position. You've got to make it look like we do. Sooner or later, they're going to get around to trying us.
The firepower we have is better than what we had in the wolves. Supports, heavy weapons, mines, that counts for a lot.
When the construction equipment is done with the artillery, it's all yours.
I appreciate it, sir.
Rough out what you want and run it by Stiakowski. She's sharp. I've told her and Mr. Post that you're in charge of getting us ready. They'll follow your orders. If there's anything I can do, let me know.
You've done more than enough. How long are we going to have to be here?
How long were you going to hold that road to Hazlitt?
It's like that, sir.
We got to keep as many troops occupied as possible for as long as we can. We're right at the nexus of river and rail traffic in the Ozarks. We need to make sure they can't use it, at least not easily. We've got to protect the artillery covering the river and rail lines.
Then I'll build a redoubt around these buildings and foundations. We have to figure on them getting on the plateau. More railroad rails and ties would be nice.
There's a line running to the quarry. The Pulaski Heights boys might have something to say about us working right across the river from them.
Maybe the 155s can say something back to them if they do.
Nail was a little pale, but he was eating and sleeping well. Valentine didn't think Dr. Kirschbaum, the medic treating him, looked old enough to be a doctor, but wasn't about to ask her for a diploma.
Better than I'd have expected. Could be that kidney's in better shape than the triage report says. You should see this.
The doctor led him over to Nail. The bear lay on a bed now. They'd taken mattresses from the construction huts and moved them into the hospital, along with a generator and a refrigerator that had been holding beer.
Lieutenant, you've got another visitor.
I'm about visited out, Doc. Well, unless he's got more Narcissus gumbo.
You need a second nurse to handle your dishes and bedpans as it is, soldier.
Nail drained his canteen and handed it to the doctor.
More.
Do your trick first, Lieutenant.
What trick is this, Nail?
Check out my toes, sir.
They were wiggling.
You don't have a battery under here, do you?
Ever treated a bear before, Doc?
I've seen some DOAs. You boys take a lot of killing, judging from the holes. I'll leave you with the Lieutenant, Major. Or are you going to ask him for a quickie, too?
Nail winked. Valentine swung around the chair next to Nail's bed.
Glad you're feeling better. What's in that gumbo?
Part of being a bear.
This isn't healing, Nail. This is more like regeneration.
You know Lost and Found, sir? You know why he's called that? He's got me beat. He was dead. Like, body getting cold, dead. And he came back. He was in a friggin' body bag, sir. Zipped up and in a pile. He came too when the gravediggers picked him up. It's like a legend, this story. Sat up and asked his mom for griddle cakes. Three men there had simultaneous heart attacks. He kept the twist tie on the tag they stuck through his ear. We try to keep it quiet. In case we ever get captured, we don't want some quisling cutting a notch in our arm just to see how quickly it heals.
Valentine found Narcisse in the basement of the hospital, pouring honey down the center of loaves of bread, risen and ready to go into the oven. She was organizing the kitchen with the help of one of the pregnant POWs and a former Quisling soldier, one of the three from the captured bunch at the warehouse, who looked about 15.
Where's Hank? I thought he was helping you out.
He volunteered for the artillery. Da woman Casey came through earlier today. She adopted the boy.
How's he doing?
He told me he hated his parent. He hoped they're dead.
No, he doesn't. Would it help if I talked to him?
David, I don't know what you did when you went off that night. I don't want to know. I think it best if Hank, he never know either. You tell him his parent, they run away.
What makes you think they didn't?
Your eyes. They are your grief. They say when you leave that place, you were deep in blood.
Enough with that juju stuff, sissy. What have you been putting in nail soup?
Sausage? Rice? Celery? No chili or nothing? The doctor, she say keep it mild.
That's not what I mean. He had nerve damage. It's healing. I'd heard bears recovered from stabs and bullet wounds fast, but I've never known of a higher animal doing this.
More things in heaven and earth, David. If I knew how to make a gumbo that make Cane Man walk again, I use him on myself and get new legs.
Colonel Major, passing the word from Major Valentine.
Down here!
A private from the command company made a descent to the kitchen, a signals patch on his shoulder.
Major, Sergeant Jimenez needs you in the radio room. Priority broadcast from Southern Command for all troops.
Did you say broadcast?
Yes, sir. Not direct communication. The Sarge said you needed to hear it.
Thank you, Private. I'm coming.
Valentine stole a fresh heel of bread and dipped it in honey.
Ah, you too bad, David. This galley is supposed to be for hospital.
Impossible to resist your cooking, sissy.
Word had passed among the men that something was up. There were a couple of dozen sandbag fillers trying to look busy in front of the Federal-style command building. A new long-range radio mast had gone up atop its molding-edged roof since the previous day. The signals private held the door for Valentine. The radio room was a sub-basement below the conference room where Solon had laid out his scheme for finishing off Southern Command. Solon had a sophisticated radio center. A powerful transmitter, capable of being used by three separate operators, was surrounded by the inky, flimsy spitters capable of producing text or images from the right kind of radio or telephone signal. Sergeant Jimenez had a pair of earphones on, listening intently.
Does Jimenez have the klaxon rigged yet?
I helped him, sir. Klaxon, PA, he can even kill electricity.
Quick work.
To tell you the truth, sir, it was mostly rigged already. We just added the kill switch for the juice.
What's the news, Jimenez?
Oh, sorry, sir. Lots of chatter. Something big is going on down south. I'm scanning Southern Command and TMCC. Sounds like there's action somewhere on the banks of the Washita.
What about west? Anything from Martinez?
Not a word, sir. Like we don't exist.
What'd you call me here for, then?
There's gonna be a broadcast from the governor. Thought you might like to hear what he had to say.
I'm not the only one, Jimenez. Can you put this on the PA?
Wait, I can. Just give me a sec.
The radio tech rooted through a box of tangled cords in the corner, pulling up wires and examining the ends. He pulled out a snarl of electronics cable and unwound what he was looking for. Valentine put an ear to the headphones, but just picked up static. His eyes wandered over the Christmas-like assortment of red and green telltales, signal strength meters, and digital dials. The apparatus was a Frankensteinish creation of three mismatched electronic boxes placed vertically in a frame and patched together. The electromagnetic weapons that darkened so much of the world in 2022 took their toll on everything with a chip. The more sophisticated, the more likely to be rendered useless by an EMW pulse. Sets like this were an exception. Restored military comm sets with hardened chips. The Kurians frowned on any kind of technology that allowed mass communication. Radios were hunted down and destroyed as though they were cancers. An illegal transmitter was a dangerous and practically impossible thing to have in the Kurian zone. Only the most trusted of the Quisling commanders had them for personal use. Southern Command made transmitter receivers by the hundreds, and receivers in even greater quantity in little garage shops for smuggling into the Kurian zone, and of course had encouraged the citizens of the Free Territory to own them as well, even if they were on the telephone network. Caches of radios had probably been hidden along with weapons when Solon's forces overran the Free Territory. If Governor Pauls was about to make a statement, Chances were he had in mind speaking to those of his former citizens who still possessed theirs, and if they still had radios, they probably had weapons. Valentine hoped for a call to rise. The Ozarks, especially near the borders, were full of self-reliant men and women who knew how to organize and fight in small groups. With his guns at the center of the Quisling transport network, the Kurians would have difficulty stamping out fires.
We're live, sir. Just let me know when you want to pipe it through.
Valentine picked up another pair of earphones.
When's the broadcast?
Soon, sir.
I'm just getting static.
I'll fix that.
The technician sat and worked the tuner.
Code messages again. Something's happening.
Why aren't they doing it in the dead of night?
They usually do. Reception is better. Maybe they want to get it rolling today, before the Kurians can react.
Or tonight.
Could be, sir. Oh, just a sec. 5 minutes.
Give me the microphone.
When Jimenez handed it over, Valentine tested the talk switch.
Lend an ear, men. Lend an ear. We've got a broadcast coming in from the governor. I'm not sure what it's about, just that it's a general broadcast to what used to be the Ozark Free Territory. I figured you'd want to hear it. We'll pipe it over soon as it comes on.
They've got cassettes, so I can tape it.
For those on watch, we'll tape it and play it back tonight. That is all.
To pass the time, Jimenez took Valentine through the shortwave spectrum. There were notes on a clipboard about where to find the bands for the Green Mountain Men, the Northwest Command, even overseas stations like the Free Baltic League.
We'll have to set up a canteen where you can play the news. Solon has enough office space down here. We can knock down some of these walls.
Just a sec, sir. He's coming on.
Jimenez nodded to himself, then flicked a switch. Jimenez unplugged the earphones, and the sound went over the old set of speakers bracketed to the wall.
And all our friends and allies who may be listening. Late last night, after speaking to Lieutenant General Griffith, my interim Lieutenant Governor Hal Steiner, and what members of the Ozark Congress are with me at Comfort Point, I gave the order for the counterattack you've all been waiting for in this, the darkest year of the Free Territory. A combination of weather, enemy movements, and a fortuitous raid on the Quislings at the old Little Rock ruins.
Hey, that's us.
I took as portents that it is time for the storms and shadows to disperse. Therefore, I gave the order for Archangel to begin. The first shot was fired before dawn this morning. As I speak, in the south we have seized Camden and are on the march for Arkadelphia. In the north we descend from the mountains and onto the plateau. So now, I ask the men and women of the militia, when they hear the sound of our guns, to gather and smash our enemy hip and thigh. Smash them! Smash them to pieces, then smash the pieces into dust. For the outrages inflicted on us, smash them! For the future of your sons and daughters, smash them! As you are true to your heritage of liberty, smash them! For the honor dead of our cause, smash them! Now is our time. With courage in your heart, you will know what to do. With steel in your arm, you will have the means to do it. With belief in your spirit, you will not falter, but shall see it through. We have lived through the night. Now, let us make a dawn together.
Valentine found Hank Smalls learning his duties as a runner. The boy's job was to pass oral messages between the guns and the main magazine, headquarters, or the forward posts in the event of a hardline breakdown with the field phones. He and a handful of other young teenagers were being escorted around the hilltop and taught the different stations still being put together by Beck and his construction crews. Valentine went up to the corporal walking the teens around. She had the nearsighted look of a studious schoolgirl entering her senior year, despite the camp hair cropped close to her scalp. Valentine stopped the children as they lined up, as though for inspection.
Can I borrow Hank a moment?
Of course, sir.
Excuse me, Corporal.
He drew Hank aside. Hank wore a man's fatigue shirt, belted about the waist so it was more of a peasant smock. Mud plastered Hank's sandal-like TMCC training shoes, but the old tire treads were easy to run in and then clean afterwards.
How you getting on, Hank?
Busy. Lots to remember about fuses, sir.
You getting enough to eat?
Of course. Too hot and one cold a day.
Worried about your parents?
No.
Keep busy. Hank, I'm going to tell you something a Roman Catholic priest told me when I lost my parents. He said it was up to him to turn me into a man since my father wasn't around to do it. He'd never had kids, being a priest, so he had to use the wisdom of others. He used to read a lot of Latin, Roman history, you know.
For some reason, Valentine thought of X-Ray Tango and his Groma.
They had gladiators.
Right. A Roman statesman named Cicero used to say that no Roman in any circumstance could regard himself as vanquished. You know what vanquished means? What Cicero meant was that even if you were beat, you should never admit that you were. Especially not to the people who'd beaten you.
Like Southern Command keeping together even after all this.
Cicero said a man had to have three virtues. Virtus, which meant courage in battle, not minding pain and so on. You also have to have gravitas, which means being sober, aware of your responsibilities, and controlling your emotions. Even if someone has you madder than a stomped rattlesnake, you don't let them know they've got you by the nose, or they'll just give you another twist. Understand?
Virtus and gravitas. I see. But you said there was another?
This is the most important one for you now. Simplicitas. That means keeping your mind on your duties. Doing what most needs to be done at the moment. In fact, I'd better let you get back to yours. I don't want to keep the corporal and the rest waiting.
Yes, sir.
Valentine wanted to hug the boy, but settled for a salute. Gravitas required it. All through the following day, the sound of distant trucks and trains could be heard. That night, though the men were exhausted from laboring on what was now known as the Beck Line, they danced and cheered at the news that Arkadelphia was liberated, and the Quislings were falling back in disarray. Southern Command would soon be knocking on the hilly gates of Hot Springs, barely 50 miles from New Columbia. They'd had their own successes. The mortar crews had prevented repair gangs from working on the rail lines during the day, and the occasional illumination shell, followed by 4.2-inch mortar airbursts, slowed the work to a crawl at night. But strong points with machine guns were now all around the base of the hill, and the mortars on Pulaski Heights had begun to fire again, scattering their shells among the buildings of Solon's residents. Two men laying wire for field phones were killed when a shell landed between them. Big Rock Mountain added a life when one of the women gave birth. The 8.5-pound boy was named Perry after one of the dead signals men. Valentine took his eye from the spotting scope the next day. It was late afternoon, and the shadows of the hills were already stretching across New Columbia. The barge was still far from the docks, behind the old brush-covered roadway of the interstate loop. Valentine, Post, and a corporal named Durning stood at an observation post above the switchback road running up the southeastern side of the hill, looking through a viewing slit with the protection of headlogs. There were snipers at the base of the hill good enough to get them, even with an uphill shot. There had been minor wounds among the work parties until three-man teams of counter-snipers had been sent down the hill to hunt out the marksmen. Valentine knew there was a gritty war of precision and patience being waged through scoped rifles 200 feet below, but he had to keep his mind on the river, or rather, denying its use to the enemy.
That's pretty damn arrogant of them, bringing a barge up the river in daylight.
I'd say the river's too tricky to do it at night.
Then we'll make it too tricky for them to do during the day.
They're trying to time it so they can unload at night.
I'd like to see if Kessie's guns can make a difference. Durning, you're forward observer for this side, I believe.
Yes, sir.
I want that barge sunk. Can you do it?
A crawling target like that? Yes, sir.
Valentine listened to him talk into the field phone to Kessie, acting as fire direction controller, and the far-off squawk of the alarm at the gun pits. Kessie had decided that, because of the lack of experienced crews, she could only put two guns into effective action at once. The other two would be used once some of the raw hands gained experience. Within 3 minutes, the first ranging shot was fired as the barge negotiated the wide channel around the swampy turd shape of Gates Island.
30 meters short.
Kessie tried again. Through his own spotting scope, Valentine saw the white bloom of the shell fall well behind the barge. He took a closer look at the tug. Thankfully, it didn't belong to Mantilla. The observer passed the bad news about the miss.
Sir, it's the damn Quisling ordnance. Their quality control sucks sewage.
The target's worth it. Keep trying.
The Quislings on Pulaski Heights tried to inhibit the crews by raining shells down on the battery that burst in the air.
Howitzer battery. Fire for effect.
The shells traveling overhead tore through the air. Valentine stepped aside so Post could watch and call to a pair of men resting concealed behind rocks and earth along the crest line to his left.
Keep your heads down, boys! Nothing to watch worth a bullet in the head.
I think there were two hits to the cargo, sir.
Secondary explosion?
No, sir.
Probably just a cargo of rice, then. Worth sinking anyway. Corporal, keep it coming.
The sun was already down beneath the trees behind them. Three more times the guns fired, with the forward observer relaying results.
Another hit!
Sir, the barge is turning!
They cut loose from the cargo. There's a fire on board. Black smoke, could be gasoline.
Forget the cargo. Sink that tub.
It was getting darker. Tiny flecks of fire on the sinking barge could be made out, spreading onto the surface of the water. There had been some gasoline on board. The shells continued to go wide. Valentine could not make out anything other than the guttering fire.
Illuminate!
A minute later, a star shell burst over the river.
Hell yes!
Under the harsh white glare, Valentine squinted and saw the tug frozen on the swampland shallows of the northern side of Gates Island. The pilot had misjudged the turn in the darkness. Shells rained down on the barge. Its bulkheads could keep out small arms fire, but not shells. The star shell plunged into the river, but an explosion from the tug lit up the river. Another illumination shell showed the hull torn in two.
We got her! Ceasefire! Ceasefire!
Pass me that headset, Corporal. Nice work, Cassie.
This isn't Colonel Cassie, sir. It's Sergeant Hansen, sir. She was wounded by the mortar fire. Permission to redirect and counter battery.
The mortars on Pulaski Heights were scattered and in defilade. The number of shells required to silence even one or two was prohibitive.
Negative, Sergeant. Get your men to their shelters. I'm promoting you to lieutenant. You'll take over the battery. What's the situation with Colonel Cassie?
Blown out of her shoes, sir, but she landed intact. I'm hoping it's just a concussion and shock. She's already on her way to the hospital, sir.
Thank you, Lieutenant. Over and out.